We've got Gene Bolick in the studio, the host of the Weekend Water Cooler, and it is time for what is certain to be a very busy thing, not a thing, the game in which Gene and I take a look at all the things that have people upset on social media this week, and we decide, is it a thing or is it not a thing?
And once again, we're in a thing-rich environment.
We very much are. So, okay, so let's go chronologically backwards. Because we've got a whole bunch of possibilities.
And then we'll ask, did these things all happen in 1 week?
Some of them didn't, I think. Some of them are kind of ongoing. Thing number one, the Democratic debates. Last one, or the second one, I guess, of whatever, 30-some or however many they're going to have, was last night.
Is that true?
I don't know.
it's
going to feel like that by
it's
the time it's all
true.
Done. But the first round was Wednesday and Thursday. We've now seen the top 20 candidates.
Right.
Is it a thing? Are debates a thing?
Oh, I think debates are definitely a thing. I think that they were very, very telling and fascinating, mm-hmm. and they may not have been. I think that they're a terrible way to learn where your candidate stands on something.
Yes.
I think that they're a fascinating test of how people think on their feet and react to rudeness and interruption and bringing people along and how they work in a group dynamic. I think there's a lot of great things to take away from what you see in a debate, and almost none of it has to do with what's my candidate's position on healthcare.
I like that. So all of the things that people complain about with debates, the constant interruptions and the back and forth and the yelling, that's actually the thing that is important.
It's very interesting to see how people handle it. And I thought specifically that, and which this really surprised me for someone with so much political experience, I was very surprised to see how flummoxed Biden appeared to be.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was he was ill prepared for the short time frames in which you could give answers.
Yes.
He was trying to give his campaign stump kind of responses. Everything was, listen, folks, you know, it's this and that. And when you always start your answer with listen, you know, that it's like it just seemed automatically, reflexively defensive.
Yeah.
And I was surprised to see that. I don't think he was well prepared at all.
Who won?
I'm always reluctant about the winning, losing framework.
Who stood out? But to me,
the two people who dominated these debates and owned everybody out there was Harris last night.
On night two, yeah.
And Elizabeth Warren. And I've said this before, I think that's the ticket.
That could be a really good ticket, yeah.
Especially because I think that if you listen to Elizabeth Warren and then you listen to Bernie Sanders last night, you realize quite easily that Elizabeth Warren has, there is very little daylight between the two of them from a policy standpoint. Mm-hmm. And I think they both would say so. I think that she is much easier to listen to, however. She doesn't sound like she's ordering you off her lawn. And I just think that she is a better educator broadly than Bernie Sanders is. And so I think that she's going to end up slowly but quite steadily pulling support away from Bernie Sanders' campaign. And I think that she's going to have his coalition in her hand. And I think that Kamala Harris is going to take the Biden supporters, who are a natural extension of the Obama coalition. And I think that if you put those two together, I think that's a titanic ticket. I really do.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be very, very impressive.
One thing about debates is that it does give candidates who have not really gotten a lot of traction an opportunity to make a splash on a national scene. And I think with that in mind, I really like Cory Booker. He keeps getting these opportunities and not taking them. It happened again. I don't think his candidacy is taking off. And it's kind of sad because he was my top choice going in, but I don't think anything's going to happen with him.
A lot of people thought he did very well last night.
I mean, he did fine. He did fine.
He did fine.
People aren't talking about him, but he's
standing next to Kamala Harris.
Right.
And it's interesting that Kamala Harris is getting this response like this came from
nowhere.
Well,
Booker was with Warren, wasn't he?
No, he was.
Wasn't
oh
he,
no, I'm
yeah,
sorry.
He was with. He was with. He
you're right.
Gave the side eye when Beto started
oh,
speaking
gosh,
in Spanish.
Oh gosh, you're exactly right.
And
that's
the
I
only
guess,
thing that people think
well,
about
I guess
when they think about
that puts the
Booker.
Exclamation point on your on your.
But the
on
one,
your point.
But the one kind of lower tier candidate who did kind of stand out in a way that has people, more people talking and saying, "Oh, what about that person?" is Julian Castro. I think.
Oh gosh, you know he's terrific. You
yeah.
know, and you know. He's a Harvard graduate, but you know, wicked smart guy, did a great job at HUD, and I think you know, I look at a whole bunch of these people, and I think if you take about 8 of these people or 10 of these people, you could shake them up in a bag, pull 2 out, and you'd do
and
very
you'd
well,
great,
and you'd
yep.
cream Trump. So I'm just going to tell you, I'm not worried about
yeah.
whether or not any of them can beat Trump. Marianne Williamson, she doesn't. She's not in the bag.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
But I think that it's a terrific crop of people, and I think they're going to be a great administration. I think you're looking at the cabinet.
Yeah.
A lot of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thing number 2, the Supreme Court's gerrymandering decision. Thing not a thing.
I think in the end, it's not a thing. I think it's unsurprising. I'll put it that way. That. The same court basically that said, "Oh, the Voting Rights Act, we don't need this part. You know, we're done with that. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't need that. Racism is over, so we don't need that." I think that they drew this distinction that you can do gerrymandering as long as it's just egregiously partisan and not racist, which seems like just you know ridiculous to me. But I do think that. I think that states need to take care of this state
yeah.
to state,
or Congress. There is
or Congress.
There is a
There's,
bill.
They could always,
that is,
you know, they could wake up at any moment.
Yeah, at any, and I mean, and you
this
know,
coma
like,
can always end.
The Senate is what it is. The president is what is
exactly.
what he is. So
exactly right.
This is not going to get through Congress right now. But there is a bill, H.R. 1, the For the People Act, which
That's
does
right.
that.
That's
it
right.
does a whole bunch of other really, really good. In some cases, necessary. In other cases. Very beneficial things
right.
to American elections, and one of them is requiring some sort of independent redistricting at the state level. So Congress could act, but otherwise, yeah, you're right. It needs
so
to happen
when
at the state level.
So when we get a new Senate and a new
yeah.
president,
yeah.
then we'll get H.R. 1.
Yeah.
And, you know,
and
then this stuff will happen.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's obviously it's not going to happen to affect the 2020 election. We're just
mm-hmm.
going to have an overwhelming turnout in order to make things happen that need to happen
yeah.
in 2020. But as you're looking at 2022 and 2024,
yep.
That's what's going to be necessary.
And I think the Supreme Court decision yesterday is a thing. I think it's very bad for democracy and democratic values. But there were people on social media as soon as that decision came down. I was like, well, that's
no,
it. Democracy's
over. Yeah.
It's like,
no
it's not. For
no.
several reasons, one of which is the North Carolina Supreme Court is going to hear a state-level challenge to partisan gerrymandering probably by the end of the year, and that has been the case that I've been looking to a lot more than the U.S. Supreme Court
and
from
isn't,
the beginning.
Isn't the SCOTUS decision yesterday, isn't that basically instructing...
Pretty much.
Make your argument based on race. So you don't make it based on
right.
just politics, oh, because it sounds like sour grapes that the other guys won.
Yes, And those cases have been going through as well. So yeah.
So yeah, I mean it's yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. It's a bad decision for democratic values, but it's something that can be overcome. So thing right. but not the end of the world kind of thing.
It is not the end of the world.
Thing
and
number
we know it.
Thing number 3, E. Jean Carroll's sexual assault accusation
you
against
know,
Donald Trump.
I was telling you before, I think it's I believe her. I just want to be clear about that, but it is a curiosity to me that she's been asked, because there's no longer a statute of limitations on mm-hmm. rape in New York. You know, would you talk to a prosecutor? Would you consider prosecuting this? Would you want to bring charges to prosecute? She says, "Oh no, no, no," because you know, in my time, this sort of thing happened. This sort of thing. You're describing a rape.
Mm-hmm.
And she's saying, basically her argument is, no, I'm over it. I'm not interested in doing that. And yet, it's in this book. And obviously the publisher must have gotten, taken some pause at this accusation and saying, yeah, he is the president, and, you know, we want to check it out. We want to corroborate it. Now the two women that she told concurrent with the event have come forward and been named mm-hmm. to the New York Times saying, yes, she told us immediately.
Yeah.
I mean, I do believe her, but her approach to this in terms of making the accusation is that she'll make it in the media and in her book, but not in a court of law. That's curious to me.
I guess. I understand why someone would not want to go through the courts, because especially when it's something that happened how many years ago?
It's a little over 20 years ago.
20 years ago. Mm-hmm. This is a very difficult thing to prosecute, right? As we've seen, like the
right?
people who... what's the statistic of people who commit rape? How many of them are ever actually prosecuted? Even smaller percentage are convicted. And one of the reasons is that standard of proof with a case that A is 20 years ago, so there may not be physical evidence, and B, even if there was physical evidence, and you see this all the time in sexual assault cases, the accused just says, well, it was consensual, and then it becomes the he said,
the classic,
she said situation.
Right.
And if you're on a jury and you're looking for a burden of proof, and that's why this is a very difficult thing to prosecute in the court of law. And that's, I don't know how to get around that. Like, I don't know how you overcome that in the courts.
I understand how a prosecutor might say,
mm-hmm.
you know, we'll look at it. We'll interview anybody who we need to interview in conjunction with this, but it's pretty unlikely that we'd be able to make a case. I get that.
Yeah.
I don't get her saying, no, I don't want to have anything to do with that, because you've already put this out in public. You're already subject to, she's had death threats already. You're going to have all those bad things associated with making this accusation.
Yeah.
Why would you cut off that avenue? I don't get it.
Because
she might be able to explain it, but I haven't heard it yet.
So many other women going down that same road and winding up at a dead end.
And so it's only okay for her to put it in her book. Because then
yeah,
it's,
know.
but it is part of her larger message in her book. So it could be that this is just the part that gets pulled out of her book for the obvious enticing reason. But you know,
I get where she's coming from. It's obviously a thing though in this context.
Gosh, and the more Trump ham-fistedly denies it, she's not my type. Oh my goodness, Donald. It just gets worse and worse for making it clear that it almost certainly happened.
Mm-hmm.
The more he badly denies it, you know, I think that it requires explanation on his part. I'd like to see him get a little more hassled about this, and I hope that the media doesn't look away too quickly. I think that other women should come forward. I'm sure they're out there.
And they have.
Yeah.
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 Who's on the water cooler this weekend?
Yeah. Who's on the water cooler? Mark Margopoulos. What a great guy he is, you know. Hardworking county commissioner. Talking about budgeting, I think. And, you know, we always love to hear from Mark.
Mm-hmm.
He's awesome. He's like you. I call. He says, what time?
I do that when you call.
You do?
Yeah.
After you say, who is this and how'd you get my number?
And why is it 3 o'clock in the morning?
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. You couldn't wait until 7 a.m. Gene, for crying out loud. I know.
Although it's
that.
Me, so I'm more likely to be awake at 3 o'clock versus 7 o'clock.
Right.
You know
right.
that about
my
me.
My other not a thing, by the way, just for the record, is I want everybody on the planet to stop wringing their hands about whether or not we're ready for a woman... for an all-female president and vice president ticket. Please stop right away.
Are people saying that? I haven't heard that. I mean, I'm sure there are.
I'm not naming any names, but you know some of them. And you know, I realize it's a little bit of a generational thing, and it's also fear of losing and riling up the old school guys on the other side. But, you know, we just have to stop fussing about that.
Check out the weekend water cooler, Sundays 1 p.m. and 8 p.m. on the Hill, Saturdays at 4 a.m., and you can get the full archive at weekendwatercooler.com. Gene Boldick, thank you so much.
Thank you. Stay cool, everybody.